Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Welcome to Advanced. Today we're going to continue Chicago history as retold in music, and our panelists are
Campbell,
Ruth,
and Doris. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the second day of this article of something that happened this year in Chicago. A symphony played something about the Chicago River. A very unusual kind of lesson, isn't it, Ruth?
It is very unusual. It's not something that you would normally think we discuss, but it is quite interesting if you like history, which I do.
And there's a lot of history every place in the world, but as we discuss history in different places, we'll see some issues that come up, the issues of pollution and of cleaning things up and how what we do, one affects somebody else. And there's a lot of things to think about as we study this lesson. Isn't that right, Campbell?
That's right. And I think it's also interesting that there's different ways that you can talk about history and show history, right? You can talk about it and teach about it in a classroom, or you can show it through pictures, or here we're talking about music.
In fact, we've talked about three different ways that they've showed this particular event. You heard about it in class and in history books, and these men wrote this last Lost Panoramas book, and now we have another Chicagoan who wrote a piece of music to describe the event.
And we could talk about what the event was, what it means, and some other issues that have to do with taking care of our world and keeping it clean today. So there's a lot to discuss here.
Right. I think it's important to always think about the consequences of our actions, right? I think we can try to think of things that might benefit ourselves, but we need to think, okay, how do these things affect others?
Right. You can't just do what's best or beneficial for you. You have to think about who else it's going to affect. And we talked yesterday about the phrase triumphal and detrimental. It was triumphant for the people who did the project, and it was great for them, but it was detrimental for the people that it affected down the river.
And usually, like in history books and all, they're mostly reading about this or articles or talking about it. But we also like to see photos of things so we can imagine a little bit more. So today, we're going to talk about the photographic evidence, not just what people said or what they heard or the records that were there, but the photos that were also an evidence to this thing. So that's the way the book started, right?
Yes, it is. These two authors unearthed all these photographs and started looking through them, and then they probably realized this would make a fantastic book because it tells a really interesting story.
Right. So here, I like how it talks about evidence. So it's something that's proving something, right? It's something that's proving something that happened, and I think later on we'll find out why these photos were taken in the first place.
As we're going to read on today about the photographic evidence. I hope you have a magazine. If you don't have the paper magazine, the e-magazine, listening in as we begin today's lesson on the history retold in music of the reversal of this river in Chicago.
Photographic evidence. Williams began digging into the images in 2000. And spent the next several years, with Kahn, studying them. They had to pore over everything to fit the pieces together, then travel along the banks of the Chicago, Des Plaines, and Illinois rivers to identify the exact locations. The result, with highlights in the Lost Panoramas book, documents as never before the process of reversing the river and illuminates a critical era in Chicago's history. You've heard stories about the reversal of the river, but nobody saw the actual pictures, the evidence, says Williams. Nobody had seen pictures of sewer pipes coming out of a tannery, where smoke is coming from it too, or the stockyards, where it's just feet and feet of muck and refuse.
I guess nobody had seen pictures of that, and I'm not sure I'd be really interested in seeing it. Sounds like terrible pictures.
Yes, but I really like to look at historical photos because they really give you a picture of what life was like long ago. Mm-hmm. And our particular authors of this book, Williams and Kahan or Kahn, began looking at these images. They started digging into them, which would mean looking through them thoroughly.
Well, that's true. When you see pictures that were taken way back in 1894, you notice the kind of clothes people wear. I know they have pictures in Washington State of people cutting down the trees and with these big, you know, they didn't have all the equipment they do now. And it's kind of fun to look back and see those old pictures, isn't it?
Right.
Yes, it is. And doing that, again, it gets you excited about the event and what happened, and you learn more about it, and you want to learn more, too.
Right, and I think there's something about photos that really show. I mean, when you tell stories, it gets passed, but as you tell things, you know, it changes from time after some time. You know, words can change, but photos, they're very visual. They show a lot.
Well, that's true. Like even pictures in China and Taiwan, different places, when you show pictures of people. When I first came riding in buffalo carts, and Campbell's never ridden in a buffalo cart.
I don't think I've ever even seen a buffalo cart.
That's right. So if you see the picture of it, it gives you a little bit more of an idea than just hear about it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, it makes me wonder how these two men found out about these photographic negatives anyway. In other words, did they hear about that? Hey, let's look through those and see what we can find.
Well, somebody must have worked at the company, or if they worked there, or one of their friends told them about it and they got interested in it, right?
Right. And they must have been very interested in it because they spent the next several years studying them.
Well, they studied them in a very detailed way. When you pore over something, that means that you actually just spend a lot of time doing it very carefully. Sometimes people pore over their lessons at night to see if they can learn more what they're trying to study in school.
Right, looking at them in great detail, trying to learn absolutely everything about them that they can.
So
and they didn't just look
sure
at the photographs,
right.
Too.
No,
yeah.
That's right. They looked at the information that came along. And then what else did they do besides just look at the pictures?
Well, they traveled along the banks of the Chicago, Des Plaines, and Illinois rivers to identify the exact locations. So they wanted to match these photos with the real locations.
So they were trying to make it really accurate. They didn't want to just put anything down and say that what wasn't sure. They had to really figure out, is this really that place?
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed a lot, certainly in Chicago.
So I think they wanted to figure out how the photographs fit together with the places on the river and maybe the progression of the photographs themselves, too.
It's pretty interesting. You know, when they decided to make this book, they all this with highlights in the Lost Panoramas book. Lost Panoramas is a very interesting name.
Yes, it is. We talked about the fact that a panorama means a wide view of scenery. So perhaps these are scenes that nobody can see anymore.
Right. Or these were photos that were lost for a long time, you know, and now they've been discovered. And the highlights, because yesterday we said that there were over 21,000 photos. So I'm sure they couldn't put 21,000 photos in a book.
It would be a very thick book if they did. So in this book, documents the never-before-seen process of reversing the river. So in other words, it wasn't just showing the before and after. It showed the entire process of how they did it.
There's writings inside their documents, probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, document, of course, can be a noun or a verb.
Right.
To document something means to have all of the evidence to show what
right.
happened. And you need the documents themselves to do
right.
that.
So probably both. And they shows this picture of reversing this, and it sheds a lot of light on it. It illuminates. It makes it very clear what this critical time in Chicago's history was like. You can see they had this big problem. People were getting sick, and the water was polluted. And it just really shows you in a very interesting way.
Yes, and we had talked yesterday about the word luminous, which comes from the same root word as illuminate, meaning to make something bright and clear and lit so you can see it.
So here we're talking about these photos, right? And it says that Chicagoans, they'd heard stories maybe in classrooms or through their history books about this reversal of the Chicago River, but nobody had actually seen any pictures of the process and now they had some evidence.
Well, I hope the teachers in school, when they're going to be teaching about it now, will use some of those photos too. It will make it the history classes a lot more interesting.
Well, you know, people say a picture is worth a thousand words. I think that is true. You can talk and talk and talk about something, but if you can show a picture, people can say, oh, now I really understand.
And they have so much more in schools nowadays that they can show to illuminate history by showing old documents and showing old photos of things that makes it a lot more easy to remember, I think.
It does, but I'm not sure I would have really enjoyed looking at these pictures because this description of the author says no one had seen pictures of sewer pipes, which would mean, you know, all the waste from the factory coming out and all of the smokestacks with the smoke coming out and the muck and the refuse and... Ew.
Yeah, and look at Chicago today. It looks nothing like that. It's a very modern city, right? So it shows more about this, but it says you've heard these stories, but nobody saw the pictures before. And as you mentioned, there must have been really, I'd say, icky pictures, full of muck and full of refuse. That kind of reminds me of the bad words that you were talking about yesterday, the stench.
And the detritus, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one thing about pictures is they can show the look, the muck, and the garbage, the refuse, but they can't tell you the stench. And this is true about a lot of places that look beautiful in a picture to some of these foreign, underdeveloped countries. But if you get out in the countryside, the stench doesn't show up in the pictures.
Right. So, unless, maybe one day someone can develop,
I think they have had some ways you can get odors, going out in movie theaters and stuff. But
I think I'll pass on this odor. Thank you very much.
And especially if it's a bad one. If they're making French perfume, it's okay, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But this is something, the stockyards, they were really crowded with all kinds of cattle from all over, just jammed in there together.
Yes, it mentions the stockyards. So they would have pictures of these stockyards, all of these fences and all of these cattle where there's feet and feet of muck and refuse because, of course, the cattle are eliminating there and it's just piling up. They're not cleaning it out.
That's just disgusting. At first when I read this article, I was thinking, it's just a little bit under your feet. But now we're talking about feet and feet.
Muck?
That's like up to your knees, up to your waist. Oh.
And, of course, the two words, muck and refuse, again, words for garbage and filth. And
I wonder how the trumpet players did that. They made a lot of blasting, loud noises about it.
I wonder how you describe that with music. We'll have to listen to this symphony to find out.
We'll have to listen to that.
Yeah.
It makes you kind of interested in the music, right, too. But, the thing is when you have this photographic evidence, even you can say, well, people are just saying it was terrible. It wasn't so bad. Mm. Well, look at the pictures. So it is evidence. It shows you the way it really was.
It does. And I think this is probably an event that people had forgotten about or never really realized there was such a controversy about it. And now when you look at the pictures, you realize, oh, I guess that was kind of it was triumphant, but it was also detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And it's going to be coming up more later. We'll find out. But this was beneficial to some. It was very beneficial to the people who lived around the lake and to the people in Chicago. But it was detrimental to others. So here's another case where we have opposites. One is very positive and one very negative, beneficial and detrimental.
Yes, when it's beneficial, it's good for you. Like we take vitamins because they're beneficial for us. They improve our health. Detrimental means damaging.
If you eat too much candy, it's detrimental to your teeth.
That's right. Right. That's right. So detrimental is the opposite of beneficial. It's something that destroys instead of builds up.
We didn't mark those as vocabulary words, but if you don't know them, it's good to know. Probably more people know benefits and beneficial, and they don't think about what is detrimental. But we do talk a lot about protecting the environment today, and certain things like the gas emissions come out of cars is detrimental to it, and air causes air pollution. And there's a lot of detrimental things that we try to avoid nowadays. Isn't that right?
Right. I would agree. I think there's many things that we in our minor society that are more convenient but have actually ended up maybe causing more problems than have helped.
And in those days, people really didn't know too much about that. And so they weren't doing it on purpose. I mean, that was just the way they lived. They had to do these things. And they didn't realize it was detrimental to their health, to the country, to nature, to everything around about them.
They didn't think about the consequences.
They didn't think about that, did they?
No, and I think that as our world becomes more and more interconnected, something that we do does have an effect on someone quite a distance away, and we have to take that into account, not just say, oh, it's beneficial for us, so too bad for you.
Right.
We find if we pollute the air, then the wind carries that around to some other countries, and it's detrimental to the health of people in other areas besides our own.
Right. Or there's cases of where a river flows through two countries, and the first country wants to build a dam to get electricity for the river for their people. But if they do that, then the second country doesn't get any water. So you've got to figure out how you're going to take care of both needs.
Yes.
And so these words are good to know. And we like things that are beneficial, but we try not to have things that are detrimental, right?
Yes. So you want it to be beneficial for everyone and detrimental for no one.
Right.
And that's not easy to do.
Yeah. And they parallel the words that we talked about yesterday, triumphant and disastrous. So something is beneficial. The triumphant thing is beneficial, but the detrimental is disastrous.
That's a good point there. That's right. So we're going to find out more about the effects and what this was like as we read on today's reading.
Beneficial to some, detrimental to others. The effects of reversing the course of the river were as negative outside Chicago as they were beneficial there. By digging the Chicago Drainage Canal, known in the 1890s simply as the Big Ditch, the city reversed the river's flow and sent away a torrent of waste. The venture nearly doubled the size of the Illinois River, submerged land masses, deluged nearby waterways, and killed vegetation. From 1903 to 1921, the authors write, half the river's wildlife habitat was eliminated. The photographs, in fact, were taken partly to be used as evidence in lawsuits, which proliferated once the canal opened and the waters reversed in 1900. That's the story composer Davis has sought to tell in the Chicago River in 5 movements. I didn't consult them, says Davis, referring to the authors, just the book. The old adage, a picture is worth 1,000 words, is true, but not only words, sounds. I can hear the music by looking at the pictures.
Well, we can read that the effects of reversing the course of the river were as negative outside Chicago as they were beneficial there.
That's right. So here we see a sentence pattern. It's as something else. So they're making a comparison here, right? They're saying that it helped the people in Chicago, but as much as it helped the people in Chicago, it hurt other people outside of Chicago.
Hurt just as much. So it's opposite.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Once again, those opposites, beneficial and detrimental. So part of this engineering project to reverse the flow of the river was digging the Chicago Drainage Canal, which they just called the Big Ditch, which would be a way to describe this long canal that was going to help channel the water in a different direction.
This word drainage we see quite a bit when we're thinking about getting something to have to do with water. If you don't have some kind of drainage during a typhoon, then you're going to have flooding. So drainage is pretty important in city planning.
Yes, it is. You've got to have a place for the water to go. For the word to drain something means to take the water away. So the drainage is the area where that water can go to get away from the source.
So to have this kind of drainage, we have all kinds of pipes and underground things and throughout the city to take care of the water, right?
Yes. So this is Chicago. When they were planning this engineering project, they were digging this ditch called the Big Ditch, and that would help to reverse the flow and send the waste away from Chicago. In fact, a lot of it, a torrent of waste.
So 1890 sounds like a pretty long time ago, but they were planning that Chicago would be a good, prosperous city. And it certainly is today, isn't it?
Right.
Yes, it is.
And I would say that this isn't just some little high school project. This took a lot of thought and a lot of engineering and a lot of planning. So some smart people were probably involved in this.
And I'm sure it took a long time to do it, too. It had mentioned that it opened in 1900, but it looks like they've been working on it for, 10 or 12 years before it was actually accomplished.
Well, they didn't have all the big equipment and things that we have today to do this kind of stuff. But this project, they call it this venture, it almost doubled the size of the Illinois River.
Mm. Right. So earlier we learned that when they reversed the flow of the river, the river used to go into Lake Michigan. Now they were reversing it and making it go into the Illinois River and then connecting it to the Mississippi River. So when they reversed it, the water doubled the amount of water that was in Illinois River.
Right. And we mentioned that word torrent, which is another word we use a lot with water, meaning a very strong flow of water. And in this case, it's wastewater. So as a result of this huge volume of water, the Illinois River doubled in size. And because you've got more water, it's got to have more space. So it submerged land. It covered, it flooded it.
So that wasn't very good either.
And then it deluged, which is another good water word. Sometimes we can describe a rainstorm as a deluge because it's providing so much water to cover something. And so that way it overwhelmed nearby waterways and it killed plants, vegetation.
Right. So the idea here is that this extra volume of water flooded the other areas, causing things around it to die.
Well, and that's why we have a little footnote here that tells us that this was an enormous contrast, but there was a contrast from the beauty of downstate Illinois. The people in St. Louis hated them because they'd been dropping their refuse on them for the last century. And I'd feel the same way. Why dump it on us, So the people that got the dirty water weren't happy.
No, because that's, again, the contrast. It's great for the people who are getting rid of their waste and their problems, but it's terrible for the people who are on the receiving end.
Right.
And St. Louis is downriver from Chicago.
And actually, if you think about it, the beginning of the problem was people dumping in the river in the first place. So they're getting rid of their waste. They're not thinking, this is going to affect our city. And now that's causing even more problems for the rest of the country.
And we still have that problem today. What are we going to do with our atomic waste? Where are we going to dump it? And it's always a problem. What do you do with the waste? Where are you going to put it? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants it.
No one wants it in their backyard. No one wants it in their river. So we have to – that's something that scientists and engineers have to work on.
We've got to get rid of it without dumping it on somebody else. How to make it disappear, evaporate.
Yeah, no one likes to be the dumping ground.
Right.
Exactly.
But from 1903 to 1921, the authors did a lot of research, and they found out another terrible statistic.
Mm. Yes. Half the river's wildlife habitat was eliminated.
Now, that is sad. The fish, frogs, anything.
Well, I think even along the sides of the river, any kind of habitat, a place where animals live, birds or maybe even some of the animals that live along the side of the river, their habitat was eliminated. It was gone, disappeared.
Right. Well, the toxic stew killed it.
Yeah, that's really sad, But it says that these photographs were taken partly to be used as evidence when people were going to sue everybody. Mm-hmm. And they said, this shows you what happened. And certainly it looked like pretty good evidence.
That's right.
Well, as we, we've mentioned the phrase, a picture's worth a thousand words. If they can show a before and after picture, this is how beautiful the river was before it was reversed. And now look what happened after they reversed it. So if they want to sue or have a lawsuit, this was evidence. It was showing what had happened.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of these pictures showed up here. It says that there were many, many pictures.
Yes. In fact, it's also referring to the lawsuits because they proliferated. And when something proliferates, it becomes more and more and more. So once the water was reversed and some people started getting the toxic stew, they said, right, I'm going to sue you.
Right. So in a way, they saw this happening. They started taking pictures as evidence in case, something would happen. And something did happen when the canal was reversed. They were very negatively affected, so they wanted to sue.
There's probably another study about the lawsuits and who won.
Right.
But I don't think they gave them as much money in those days. Nowadays, people get millions of dollars. Probably then it was hundreds. Who knows? But anyway, the story composer Davis, he tried to tell this thing in five different movements, like a symphony.
It is. We mentioned the word opus before, which is a way that to keep track of the different pieces of music someone writes. But we divide a piece of music into movements, into parts. A lot of symphonies have three movements or four movements, but this particular one has five.
And usually this starts out with kind of an opening, and then it goes into a slower, sad one, and then a faster one, and a big finale at the end, bing, bang, bang one. Mm-hmm. So five movements. It'd be interesting to see what that's like. I'd like to hear that, Ruth, wouldn't you?
I would too, but I'd like to see the pictures that go along with it.
Well, that's true. That makes a big difference. So the one who wrote this, the symphony, Davis, he tried to tell this. So what did he do?
Well, he says he didn't consult the authors. So he didn't talk to the authors who did all this research. He just looked at the book, and as he was looking at the book, he wrote music based on how he was feeling.
Because he really agreed with the adage, which is another way to say a proverb or saying, that a picture is worth 1,000 words. In other words, he could just look at these pictures, and because he's a talented musician, the music would just come to his mind, and it would just come out of him because he could hear music that would describe what these pictures were showing.
Right.
Like Campbell said yesterday, that when you see a movie, sometimes you see a certain scene, but the music makes it feel that it's either bright or happy or unhappy. Mm-hmm. And the music and the pictures do certainly go together.
Right. And so as he was saying, it's not just pictures. Sounds actually also convey a lot, and they help people to feel and understand a lot.
So we've been talking about the situation, but I think tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit more about the music part of it and how that could connect. This is just a beginning, an introduction to that. So you have to come back tomorrow to hear the final day of this about the jazz connection. So we'll be here waiting for you tomorrow at the same time, same station. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.